This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am not Connor McKnight. I am Jeff Meller, but never fear. Connor McKnight will be heard from today on White Sox Weekly. Handling some play-by-play duties today means Connor McKnight will share some of his time with us in the pregame. He's going to hop on at 4 o'clock and run about a half an hour from now. And I'm going to turn the tables on Connor, who's usually asking all the intriguing questions of his guests. Today I'll pepper him with some queries and he'll have to come up with some satisfying answers for us, or at least some entertaining ones. And I have no doubt that Connor will be up to the task. But before then, we should get after what will be, no doubt, a very interesting 10 days ahead for the Chicago White Sox as the second half of the Major League Baseball season got underway yesterday. Sox started it out in familiar fashion, unfortunately, with a 7-1 loss to the Kansas City Royals. You know, do you ever wonder when people say, you know, the home run derby, you shouldn't compete because it messes with your swing? Well, if they ever tell you that, just tell them, no. I remember Bobby Witt Jr. participating in the home run derby, going on a run, making a deep run into that, and then sure enough, just coming right back out of the All-Star break and basically putting it on the White Sox yesterday. He is one of the best young baseball players in the game today, so Just the next time someone tells you the home run derby messes with your swing, just say, I remember Bobby Witt Jr. messing with the White Sox shortly thereafter. But I digress. We'll talk more about today's matchup against the Royals later on. But I do want to talk a little bit about the All-Star game and Garrett Crochet and everything surrounding him. Because, as I mentioned, these next 10 days are going to be critical in how Chris Getz wants to approach the future of the White Sox. And as always, if you want to participate in the show, 312-332-3776. That's the number to jump on in if you want to talk about what you think the White Sox should do as the trade deadline approaches. They do find themselves, albeit I get it, it's been a tough year for White Sox fans, but because the White Sox have probably two of the most sought-after arms of potentially available on the market, if that's the direction that Chris Getz chooses to go, they find themselves in a very, very good spot. And it, of course, all starts with Garrett Crochet, the White Sox lone all-star, who has been an absolute revelation as a starting pitcher this year, leading baseball with 150 strikeouts. He has been tormenting opposing hitters in virtually every start that he makes. It's been the feel-good story of the year for the White Sox. Caught a lot of people by surprise when he was named the opening day starter. Remember, he wanted to pursue being a starter, was originally drafted as a starter out of college baseball, quickly moved to the pen, made his Major League Baseball debut the year he was drafted, and came out of the pen, had a lot of success before injuries quickly derailed the start of his career. But he has finally bounced back and become, I think, everything that the White Sox could have envisioned and even more. And all that leads us to him participating in the All-Star game on Tuesday night in Arlington. Garrett Crochet talking about being an All-Star.
Before the first pitch was thrown, I don't know if I'd believe you, especially not after the first month of the season. But a lot of hard work went in behind the scenes, you know, with the coaching staff, Ethan Katz, Matt Wise, and, you know, the two guys that have taught me throughout the year, and Maldonado and Corey Lee. A lot of work was put in by those guys that, you know, are helping me to establish myself the way that I am right now. So couldn't be here without them.
When the season began, what were your realistic expectations in this, your first year as a starter in the big leagues?
Realistically, I was hoping to get through the year. That was my true goal that I had myself. And that's just gravy.
Forgive the audio a little bit there at the end. That was Garrett Crochet live on a cell phone from the All-Star game, joining the Waddle and Sylvie show on the flagship station for the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network here on ESPN 1000, ESPN Chicago. And you heard him, you know, reveling in the experience. And as I mentioned, 150 strikeouts. He's got 12.6 Ks per nine innings. He's hit the point now with 107 and a third innings pitched, where there's been conversation around just how many more innings pitched he will have left in his arm this season. And obviously that's going to be a discussion that the White Sox front office, along with Pedro Grifol, are going to have to consider. And no doubt it will probably play out differently if Garrett Crochet is still a member of the White Sox after the All-Star break. But where there's smoke, you have to wonder if there is indeed fire. Lots of Major League Baseball insiders are talking about Garrett Crochet being the most sought-after player available at the trade deadline. Buster Olney on the All-Star pregame show on ESPN Radio on Tuesday night.
Garrett Crochet of the White Sox is going to be traded. All-star, he's here, he's big, he's physical, he's left-handed. There are concerns among buyers about how many innings he's thrown so far this year. But you know what? Maybe a pennant contender adds him, he makes a few starts, and then shifts to the bullpen, something that he can do. Yeah, I think he's going to be the guy most talked about between now and the deadline.
So there you go. There's one Major League Baseball insider, Buster Olney, talking about Crochet being moved. And now here's the interesting thing. Buster's not the only one who's talked about it. Bob Nightingale, in his column in USA Today a little less than a week ago, mentioned this in his notes column. Quote, the San Diego Padres recently made an offer to the Chicago White Sox on ace Garrett Crochet, but it was quickly dismissed. While rival GMs are uncertain now whether Crochet will be dealt, the White Sox still fully intend to move him. So that is Bob Nightingale this past Sunday in his USA Today column talking about the intentions with Garrett Crochet. Again, you have an arm like that and you know he could be a potential game one or game two starter for virtually anyone in baseball. And so he's going to be a hot commodity. And of course, he still has 2 years of control left after this season. All the more reason why, if Chris Getz chooses to cash in, he will have a lot coming back to him in return. Jeff Passan on SportsCenter talked about what teams might be intrigued about the possibility of adding Garrett Crochet.
The San Diego Padres, L, would love to get Garrett Crochet. The Los Angeles Dodgers, with all the injuries in their rotation, would love to get Garrett Crochet. And the Baltimore Orioles, frankly, need a pitcher like Garrett Crochet. The question, though, is going to be about those aforementioned innings. He has thrown more this year than he did in the previous 4 years of his major league career, and that's just in the first half. And the fear, because Crochet has had injuries before, is that there's going to be a limited number of innings for him to pitch this year. The White Sox, though, want to reap the benefits of a guy who's a starting pitcher. So if teams are lowballing, they are not going to get Crochet, and the White Sox are more than willing to hold on to him into the winter.
So if you want to pull a glean of optimism from all of that that I just threw at you, maybe it's that teams are not going to be willing to meet the asking price, and maybe, just maybe, Chris Getz will rebuff all of those offers and say, no, you know what, Garrett Crochet is good enough. He's proven that he's the front of the rotation guy, and we'll move forward with him. And if that's the case, I think plenty of White Sox fans will be very happy. And at the same time, I'll also note that because they are in this position where they find themselves as having the most sought-after piece, that they're going to determine the market it would take to trade Garrett Crochet if indeed that's the route they want to go down. So Chris Getz, for once in the season, I think, looks at it and can say he holds all the cards here. And hopefully he will, you know, if they want to make a move. And, you know, I'm of two minds here, because I see what Garrett Crochet is doing as a frontline starter. And part of me says you trade Garrett Crochet and you immediately wonder, how are you going to be replacing Garrett Crochet? Now, do the White Sox already have designs on who a future replacement could be? Well, we'll get to that here shortly. But it is something that concerns you if the White Sox do end up trading Garrett Crochet. At the same time, I look at how difficult it is to remain healthy as an elite pitcher in baseball. And it's, look, it doesn't matter how perfect your mechanics are. It doesn't matter how much they, you know, I'll go back to USC product Mark Pryor. He was the perfect pitching prospect. And sure enough, his career was completely derailed despite those perfect mechanics because of injury. There's no steadfast number that you can point to when it comes to innings pitched and say, if we limit a guy and we progressively increase them this number, it will turn him into a guy who in the future you can count on going 180 innings year after year. That's just not the reality of pitching. There has been no perfect blueprint laid out for any front office to follow. It is absolutely a bit of a guess and check method when you're trying to work with starting pitchers. And so I do get the potential inclination of fielding offers from teams that are in the race right now who want to set up their rotation in the playoffs and then asking them, okay, what's your best offer? If you meet that asking price, maybe it is time for us to go ahead and trade Garrett Crochet, knowing that he has hit the heights that we hoped he could one day, and cash it in for some future prospects and potentially major league ready hitters who you know can be here for the long term when the White Sox are hopefully competing for playoff spots and AL Central Division crowns again. So I get why Chris Getz right now is in a spot where, you look at the Bob Nightingale and he's not hearing what he wants, and so he's not going to do it. But again, you wonder if as we approach the trade deadline, which is Tuesday, July 30th, 5 o'clock Central Time, as we approach that, you wonder if some teams will start to get a little bit itchy and start to increase their prices when they are calling Chris Getz about what they're willing to give him in potentially obtaining Garrett Crochet. And the other thing is that the White Sox also hold another starting pitcher who is obviously coveted by a lot of teams around baseball. And I'm talking, of course, about Eric Fetty, who has been quite possibly one of the best free agent signings when it comes to value in all of baseball. So the White Sox have both Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty, and they're basically going to have the opportunity to kind of dictate how the Major League Baseball trade deadline plays out, at least in terms of what they want to do with their future. And so despite a rough season, I look at it and say 10 days from now, the White Sox can be in a very advantageous position. And hopefully Chris Getz makes some smart decisions that will help really turn this franchise around and head in the right direction that they certainly need. One player who the White Sox will be counting on to help them turn this all around is their first round pick in Sunday's draft. And that, of course, is dominant left-handed pitcher Hagen Smith, who the White Sox took with the fifth overall pick. The White Sox director of amateur scouting, Mike Shirley, talked, and I'll let you hear from Mike Shirley later on in full, but I wanted to share this brief snippet from Mike Shirley regarding Hagen Smith.
I would agree with that. You know, obviously you want to be delicate. You want to make sure you build him up. You want to make sure the long-term play of and health and overall make sure they're major league ready. But the weapons, the arsenal is real. These guys are, most importantly, they're elite athletes with elite stuff.
With Hagen, just both, what about your confidence in development of a third pitch as much as he dominated with fastball and slider played into, you know, this choice, and also your confidence in how specifically he would develop with, you know, the White Sox, with, you know, Brian Banister, with Matt Zaleski, with kind of what has been successful to the system previously?
Absolutely. And we think there's a third pitch in there. When you dominate the varsity league, we call that the varsity league, the SEC, at the levels in which you did that, and you do it without a third pitch, that's a pretty good indicator of how good the two weapons are. I think the changeup comes. Obviously, it's something we continue to dive into up to the moment. He feels good about his changeup. He feels good about developing that pitch. But the Brian Banister is excited about this pick, a big part of the process in selecting the player. And we know what power lefties do in our ballpark and the success and the runway we've had with these type of players.
Of course. And I should have maybe set it up a little better. The question was asked, you know, did Mike Shirley agree with the idea that Hagen Smith could be major league ready quickly, and he said he does believe that is a possibility there if they continue to hone those weapons, and he mentioned there potentially add a third pitch. They do believe he could be a front of the rotation left-hander, potentially somebody who could pair with Noah Schultz, the White Sox top pitching prospect in the minor leagues right now. And as Mike Shirley mentioned, we are very familiar, not just with Garrett Crochet, but of course Chris Sale as well, what power lefties can do at Guaranteed Rate Field and in other ballparks around baseball. So hopefully Hagen Smith will be the next in the long line of success stories that the White Sox have had with left-handed pitchers. 312-332-3776 if you want to jump on in and participate in the conversation on White Sox Weekly. I'll be here until 5:30 when we get the pregame going again with the White Sox taking on the Kansas City Royals in Game 2 tonight. Jonathan Cannon will be on the hill for the White Sox. Hey, take advantage of one of our best offers this summer. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. Plenty more to come. Again, I mentioned we'll let you hear from Mike Shirley in full about the entire White Sox draft. Connor McKnight joins me in about 15 minutes from now. Maybe we'll get Kylie McDaniel as well, who was anchoring ESPN's coverage of the Major League Baseball draft on Sunday, pick his brain about what he thinks the White Sox will be doing. And of course, with a lot going on regarding baseball and waiver wire moves, the White Sox were very busy this week. We'll get you caught up on some of the latest and a brand new baseball player who you may have been unfamiliar with, who made his debut yesterday. We'll let you hear from him coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 3, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back on into White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, hanging out with you until 5:30 when we get the pregame coverage rolling here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. White Sox taking on the Kansas City Royals in KC for Game 2 of a three-game set. Jonathan Cannon, the belated birthday boy, just turned 24 two days ago. He'll take the hill against Brady Singer for the Kansas City Royals at Kauffman Stadium. It was actually in KC about 5 days ago. Let me tell you, the White Sox dodged some brutal heat. It was well above 100 for five straight days, and it was insufferable. So much better temps down in KC tonight as the White Sox take on the Royals. Hey, guess what? 90s music fans, join us at the ballpark on Friday, July 26th for 90s Night presented by Guaranteed Rate as the Sox take on the Mariners at 7:10 p.m. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Again, that's for 90s Music Night coming up on July 26th. All right, I mentioned some roster moves that took place over this past week. They were coming fast and furious as we do embark upon the second half of the season. Lots of things happening. Of course, the White Sox, if you missed it, they said goodbye to Martin Maldonado. He has officially been removed from the picture so that Corey Lee can see more time behind the plate, perhaps before Edgar Quero gets the call. Edgar Quero, of course, one of the White Sox best young prospects, catcher in the minors. Potentially, maybe we see him later in the season or at the start of next year. But nevertheless, Corey Lee has an opportunity now to really sit behind the plate for an extended period of time. And we'll see what he can do handling the pitchers. Also, Danny Mendick was designated for assignment. Lenin Sosa was optioned back to Charlotte to make room on the roster so that the White Sox could sign recently released Nick Senzel, who was actually the number 2 overall pick back in 2017. They signed him to a major league contract. He made his debut yesterday, went 0-for-4 for the White Sox. But I do like that move by the Sox. Senzel is somebody who has dealt with a lot of injuries in the past. And I have to say, though, there's been times where he has been healthy and for extended periods of time, over, you know, a month, 2 month span, he has really gotten hot and really showed you that he does have some major league ability. So I like the flyer by the White Sox. He's also got a little bit of versatility, somebody who can play third base, second base, outfield positions as well. So might be somebody who they can plug in and at least get a little bit more major league at-bats from down the stretch here. And also, Blake Baldwin. So who is Blake Baldwin, right? That's the question I'm sure a lot of White Sox fans were wondering last night when they saw the second baseman make his Major League Baseball debut and also get his first Major League hit. Well, Blake Baldwin was called up and he shared his story about getting the Major League call.
It means the world to me. I mean, growing up as a little kid, this is what every baseball player dreams of. And to do it as quick as this, it's very special, very unexpected at this time. But now I found out I was actually in Lowe's with my mom. And I was in Lowe's, and Jersey texted me and was asking if I was fishing today, and I said no. And I sent him a text back, and a couple minutes went by, so I called him and made sure everything was all right. And he put Paul on the phone, and he let me know. And I don't really know what happened after that. I was kind of in shock and couldn't really talk back. But after a couple minutes, I was able to basically say thank you, and it's a great opportunity.
What city and what were you buying when you were in Lowe's there? What city?
I was at home in Wyville, North Carolina. We were getting some stuff to fix our screen door that our dogs had tore up.
That's great.
Did you finish the purchase, or did that just
go? Oh, yeah, we got it. Yeah, we got it.
You told mom she may have to fix it herself. You gotta go to Kansas City.
We got it almost. My dad got it fixed when we got back to the house. But okay. Yeah.
All right, and let me apologize. It's Brooks Baldwin. Just goes to show how he may not have been on the radar of every White Sox fan. And I'm staring at all this draft info. We've got Blake Larson, who was the third pick for the White Sox in the most recent draft. And so I kind of confused their names, though, so I apologize. Brooks Baldwin, E1 on your host there, but a pretty cool story about getting the call while he was in Lowe's. And just, it's always cool to hear the stories from the players when they finally get, you know, the news that they've been pursuing their entire life, a lifelong dream. So to hear it, him tell it was pretty cool. We'll let you hear more from Brooks Baldwin later in the show as well. But up next, we'll chat with Connor McKnight, who will be on the call of tonight's game as the White Sox take on the Royals. We'll do that next. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM FM HD and app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight. Connor will join us here momentarily, but before we bring in the man doing play-by-play duties tonight, let's pause 10 seconds for station IDs.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hot dog presented by Vienna Beef. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to create and name their own hot dog that will be sold in the stadium. The winner will also receive 25 tickets to the CIBC Fan Box to host their family and friends. Enter whitesox.com/sweepstakes. All right, as I mentioned, our pleasure to be joined by the man who's usually sitting in this seat doing all the questioning of the guests. Today I turned the tables on him. Connor McKnight jumps on in here on White Sox Weekly. Connor, my friend, how's KC treating you? A little barbecue at all?
Not yet. That's the plan for dinner tonight. I visited the Negro League Baseball Museum this afternoon. That was an incredible experience. I'm really enjoying my first time at the K. Fun part about Kauffman Stadium is that in the back corner, what is this? Left center, if you go all the way back, they have the Little K. It's like a turf wiffle ball field for the kids to play at while the big league game is going on. And that is low-key one of my favorite things about ballparks is the fact that, yes, you've got the Major League Stadium, but you also have a place for the little guys and gals to go run out there and play a little wiffle ball during the game. Love it. Absolutely fantastic. I had a huge smile on my face knowing that's here.
That is pretty cool. I agree with you completely. It's nice that, you know, I don't know how long ago it finally was. The White Sox might have been one of the first teams to actually embrace it with the fundamentals deck that they put in so long ago. But it is nice to see that, you know, Major League Baseball teams around the league have all kind of incorporated that understanding that the attention span of the youngsters, you know, not quite the way it once, you know, it was back in the day when we had nothing to distract us, you know, every second of every day. So good to see that other teams around baseball are doing the same. I completely agree with you. I have to ask Connor. Go ahead.
Jeff, it's not only the attention spans of the youth anymore, but it is also the patience of young parents. As the father of a 1.5-year-old, I couldn't imagine keeping her busy for a 9-inning ball game, even with the new pitch clock and everything. I can't wait to bring her out to a ball game and then send her to a wiffle ball field and have her run the bases until she falls asleep. That's just, I mean, that's a parent's dream right there is what it is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think as the father of twin 14-year-olds, the move is to get in early, let them experience the ballpark, and then until they hit a certain age, you're usually bailing before the 9th inning. But I think that's perfectly acceptable just to get out. And that's usually, at least from a bit of a veteran parent here, that's my advice for the young parents out there as you're bringing kids and bring them to experience the game. Don't make it a full day. It doesn't have to be. Just get out to the ballpark, enjoy the experience, and then eventually build up that stamina. Kind of the way you do with young pitchers, you know, you build up the stamina.
They're like a young starting pitcher at that point. Did he get out of the fifth without allowing a run? Yes. Well, then let him leave with a happy memory. Yes. Get him the hell out of there and let him be a happy day.
Get him an ice cream sandwich, hit the road, and make it a memorable day. Everybody will be
cooler and orange slices all around.
Everyone will be much better off for it. All right, Connor. So I want to start, obviously, big picture here with the White Sox. I began the show talking about how the next 10 days are going to be really critical for Chris Getz in determining how the future of the White Sox will unfold. And, of course, everything centers around Garrett Crochet, who, if he does become available, will be the most sought-after pitcher on the market. And so because of that, Chris Getz really does hold all the cards. I'm curious as to what your thought is about what the White Sox potentially could do at the trade deadline, maybe getting back a haul for Garrett Crochet, or would you just rather them build around a frontline starter when you've got him on the roster?
Well, I think what's more likely to happen, and I've been saying this on the show for a couple of weeks now, and I maintain that this is the most likely thing from my perspective. I don't think Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert Jr. get traded at this deadline. And I think the reason is from both sides, really, that the caveats around each player are too difficult, especially when you consider the high caliber talent that each guy clearly is, right? I mean, we knew what Luis Robert could be. He proved that last year. The injury this season, obviously a setback and a reason for teams to balk at whatever asking price that Chris Getz may have, for good reason on both sides. And with Garrett Crochet, it was a huge question mark, almost as wide as his shoulders coming into the season. And he's proven everybody wrong. But there's a fair question about just how many more innings he can pile on for whatever contender might pick him up. And I think those things, independently for each player, combine to make them more valuable to the White Sox during this offseason when trades are going to happen, as opposed to during this trade deadline, these next 10 days. I could be wrong, but I do think that that's the most likely course. It's very clear that the White Sox are open for business on both players. You can't have the number and quality of national reports that you have had over the All-Star break about each player's potential to get dealt and not realize that the White Sox are very clearly fielding calls and making calls. But I do still think that this is a pretty defining point of the White Sox franchise in that there are still some talented players that Chris Getz does need to make deals for in order to enrich the farm system, the long-term future of this team. Guys like Eric Fetty are top of that list, and you can still get some quality players for him. I just think that the two big names, the two biggest talents are probably more valuable to the White Sox in deals this offseason than they are in the next 10 days. And Jeff, if you stopped me right now and said breaking news, one of them has been traded, I would be a little bit surprised, but not too surprised. That's just the way this looks like right now. I think that's the way baseball has kind of set itself up with the parity in the National League and the American League being, you know, pretty top heavy in contenders.
Well, and you know as well as I do, Connor, too, I get it. Like, the asking price should be outrageous for Garrett Crochet because of what he's accomplished. Yes. And we know what a frontline starter can do come playoff time, how they can swing odds in your favor tremendously. Maybe not quite the same the way they used to be, but every team feels much better when you confront your rotation with a Garrett Crochet to start out a short playoff series. And so Chris Getz should be asking for the world. And if he doesn't get an asking price, I know Bob Nightingale had the report that the San Diego Padres made an offer and it wasn't good enough. So I love to hear that Chris Getz isn't just looking to offload Garrett Crochet to cash him in. I, you know, if you don't get exactly what you want, there's no reason, I believe, to send him out the door packing. And I'll also add, I'm sure it doesn't help the situation that a lot of teams around baseball who do want Crochet are also looking at the fact that he's now pitched more innings than he ever has in his Major League Baseball career. And quite honestly, nobody really knows how to handle pitchers and inning workloads.
Yeah, I think that's all right. I think, you know, it's been floated around by many that, I don't know, say the Phillies or the Dodgers or whomever, right? You get Garrett Crochet, you bake him into your starting rotation for next season for 25 and 26, and this year he becomes your Andrew Miller, right? Your two or three inning guy, your opener in a playoff series or something like that. And that's all well and good. But that presumes that Garrett is absolutely fine from now until October 5. And, like, I don't know, that seems like too big a risk if I'm Dave Dombrowski or if I'm Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers. That seems like too big a risk to give up the entirety of the farm system that Chris Getz is rightly asking for this season. I mean, the flags fly forever, right? And these trades, I think more GMs should make them to win now. It's just that Crochet comes with the variable no one can answer, right? No one can really solve for. To say nothing of the fact that wouldn't a team feel more comfortable about the player once their medical staff comes and checks him out, once their biomechanics comes and checks him out? That's stuff that can't happen until that player is acquired by that team. Sure, there's the public data that's available, and that'll make everybody feel better about things. But I would imagine having a training staff literally put your hands on a left shoulder of Garrett Crochet feels even better than the public data, right? I mean, that just is what it is.
Connor McKnight joining me here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Connor, yesterday's game, a couple of players who also we probably expect to be moved at the trade deadline. Tommy Pham, a couple of base hits, including a stolen base. Paul DeJong, you know, those are two players who I look at and I have to believe they will be moved at the trade deadline because it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to be here for the long term.
No, I completely agree. Paul has been pretty upfront with different outlets that he's talked to about his understanding that's what's going to happen here if he keeps playing the way he has, and he has. He's a curious player and skill set, but obviously the power is there and he can play shortstop. Most teams would like to add that. Shoot, he was worse than he is now last season and still got dealt to a contender. It didn't work out for him, but the value's there. Honestly, I think Tommy Pham is a great fit for either the White Sox last opponent, the Pittsburgh Pirates, as they look to add offense literally at any position, or even these Kansas City Royals, who look to add offense at literally any position but catcher or shortstop. I mean, those are two teams that probably don't want to pay a whole lot in terms of salary, right? And Tommy Pham's not too expensive. Slugging is money, right? And Tommy, for the at-bats he gives you and the quality defense he offers in both corners, doesn't exactly slug a lot, but still would be an upgrade to just about any spot in the outfield for either club or the DH spot, for that matter. You could do a lot worse if you're the Royals or Pittsburgh than making a move like that, and I would not be surprised at all if that happens very shortly.
Yeah, you mentioned the Kansas City Royals not having any difficulties at shortstop. Whatever happened to the home run derby messing with your swing? It certainly did not affect Bobby Witt Jr. last night.
No, he's, man, Jeff, he's something else. I know you've watched it as closely as anybody because you're a sick baseball fan like I am. But
I am.
The development for this kid who came into the league just a couple of years ago, he wasn't very good at short. Or if you'd say, okay, well, he's got all the skill sets, but he's making simple mistakes, that's fine too. they're not there anymore. And you can talk all you want about the 11 errors he's got at shortstop. I think errors are a really bad way to measure the defense of a player who's got the range that Bobby Witt does, especially on the infield. And I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir with you here, but I mean, you look at the numbers this guy puts up. He's got 13 outs above average on Baseball Reference or a Baseball Savant. That's the highest number for a shortstop. He's got a ridiculous arm. He's got tons of speed, power to all fields. And, oh, by the way, this year he's figured out how to keep the ball in play at a higher rate. I mean, this is quite simply one of the best players in the game. And if not for Aaron Judge making his run or Gunnar Henderson making his, Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy that you're talking about as AL MVP and not really sweating the bet you put down to get him.
Yeah, I mean, he's, believe it or not, like I do think he's actually flown somewhat under the radar this year a little bit. Last year he was one stolen base shy of going 30-50. Had 49 steals last year, but he only had a 319 on base. And to your point about what he's been able to, how he's been able to improve, he's hitting 328 this year with a 375 on base. He's already accumulated 5.6 WAR. He's just been a superstar, and as good as he was last year, he's just jumped it up a whole other level. And I've just been, you know, every time I see him play when the Royals play the White Sox, I'm just like, wow, he is amazing. I can't wait for the day when the White Sox get themselves one of him.
Man, you and me both. And I'll tell you too, I'll pump up my guy. You know, he hits the Darren Jackson was talking about it during the at bat that he had against Flexen in the first inning. He hits the home run. And then in his next at bat, he comes up with an RBI single up the middle with runners at first and third. And what DJ does so well on a broadcast is explain to you listening how the first at bat, the homer, kind of sets up how Witt is trying to get done what he wants to get done in the situation in his next AB. And he kind of walks you through the whole at bat. You know, Flexen's working as hard as he can. He had some okay stuff in the first four innings, but he's kind of got to follow a pattern to get a guy like Witt out. DJ spotted the pattern early, saw the fastball up and in, went to the changeup away, and, you know, kind of points out, listen, if there's a slider anywhere toward the middle of the plate, that's clearly what Bobby's looking for because he burnt him on the home run with a fastball in. So that pitch is off the books for Flexen here, and sure enough, it's the slider up. It's got a lot of plate, and Witt drives it through the middle and scores the run for the Royals. And that's why DJ is as valuable and as fantastic at his job as he is, because he sees this stuff happen and walks you through it in real time. It's just, I mean, he saw it. He absolutely saw it, and Bobby Witt did it.
A couple more minutes with Connor McKnight here on White Sox Weekly. All right, so big picture, what are you looking for in the second half of the season here for the White Sox? I mentioned earlier some of the roster moves that came about this past week, the signing of Nick Senzel. I'm sure you guys hit on it quite a deal last night, the debut of Brooks Baldwin yesterday. What are you kind of looking forward to from this White Sox team in the second half? Because obviously we know that the wins are going to be somewhat secondary.
Yeah, it's the development, right? I think it's the development moment. I think back to Lucas Giolito's first full year as a starter with the White Sox. I was doing this job then. And then manager Ricky Renteria had an opportunity late in the ballgame to let Lucas work through a two-out bases-loaded situation. Actually, it might have been the Royals, and if it wasn't, it would have been the Guardians. And he's in there with a pitch count getting up there, and Ricky walks out there to make a pitching change, and instead gives Lucas the pat on the butt and tells him to hang in there, and this is your last batter, and go get him, right? Mm-hmm. And Lucas got him. It was probably the wrong move. It was definitely the wrong move analytically, but that the results of that game didn't matter. And what Ricky wanted to do and succeeded in doing was giving Lucas Giolito a growth moment, you know, a spot where he looks at him and goes, you're the best guy we got, bud. You're out there. Get this hitter. Get us out of this inning and, you know, achieve this goal, right? And I think those moments, especially for the young pitchers that the White Sox have, like Cannon going tonight and Thorpe going tomorrow, those are the moments that I'm going to look for because they're and Lucas pointed that game out, you know, like a week later and 2 years later as a big moment for him where his manager trusts him and gives him an assignment, and he got it done. I think those are meaningful things in-game that are going to lead to player development. So I will look for those on the pitching side of things. On the position player side, how many more? You know, how many more will the White Sox bring up? Who will come into this system with the trade of guys like Pham and Fetty and so forth that's going to be close to Major League ready and might get some playing time? Are guys like Colson Montgomery going to make their debut with less than 45 games left in the season, which allows them to achieve Rookie of the Year eligibility in next season, which is very important? I mean, shoot, the I think it's the Royals who benefited from that draft pick not too long ago and got themselves a signee. So, I think those are the kind of things. And unfortunately, on the position player side, we're kind of waiting and seeing about what those moves are going to look like. But Baldwin's, a really cool development story in this White Sox system. A guy that was, given as much rope as you could possibly give him defensively, learned to play shortstop really well, earned himself a whole lot more playing time, and just never quit hitting. So, he's just as fun as anybody to kind of watch play up here, and it was a fun one to watch him play last night.
All right, Connor, as I let you go, get ready for your pregame festivities, getting set for the broadcast day with Darren Jackson, White Sox taking on the Royals. I have to imagine you're visiting the Negro League Museum. You're doing play-by-play, stepping in here for Len for a few days. This really has to be hindering your dynasty building of EA Sports College Football 25, which has obviously been top of mind for a lot of folks these days.
Indeed it has. I will tell you, a prominent Chicago sports writer and longtime college football video game player reached out to me about a dynasty league, and I had to turn it down, at least for now. I have not yet purchased the game. I will be purchasing the game, I would say the moment, if not minutes, after returning home from this trip, and am very much looking forward to it. I think what I'm thinking, Meller, is two things. I start the Wisconsin dynasty, right, because on Wisconsin and Stocko for Heisman, all these things. But then I got to find the UW Parkside, right, or some tiny small school to bring up from the ranks, and I will be texting to find out who that team is that I can bring to prominence. I'm very much looking forward to that this offseason.
All right, well, we will have to mull that over, maybe throw out some suggestions at Connor. You can hit us up on Twitter or X, as they say these days. Maybe we can work it in the future. All right, Connor, thanks for hopping on. Have a great broadcast. We'll be listening.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for everything you do, Jeff.
Connor McKnight right there. Again, you usually hear him hosting White Sox Weekly, but he'll be on the call with Darren Jackson tonight as the White Sox take on the Royals at Kauffman Stadium. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Up next, we will let you hear from the newest pick, the first-round pick, Hagan Smith. He met the media earlier this week. We'll let you hear what you missed from the big left-hander from Arkansas. Up next here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor, who's got the call of tonight's game. It looks like we're going to be able to catch up with Kylie McDaniel, who is ESPN's Major League Baseball draft analyst. You saw him if you watched on stage on Sunday as the draft was occurring. So it looks like we're going to be able to have a few minutes with him coming up in about 7-8 minutes at 4:30. So stick around for that. Before we have a chance to have a conversation with Kylie, though, did want to let you hear from the White Sox top pick, 5th overall, the big left-hander from Arkansas, 6'3", was dominant last year for the Razorbacks. Hagan Smith, he met the media earlier this week, and here's some of what he had to say.
Yeah, I feel like I'm one of the better pitchers in the draft just going into it. I feel like I put in a lot of work to be that way. And, just having the opportunity maybe to do that would be awesome, you never know what's going to happen and what the org wants me to do, but, I definitely feel like I could do that in the future.
Hey, and just how would you describe your 2024? What were some of those keys to the success that you were able to have?
Yeah, just having a good group of guys around me and a good coaching staff at Arkansas. It's one of the top programs for a reason. The coaches did a tremendous job of preparing you and just developing you and just being around some of the guys that played there. There's a bunch of guys that are going to get drafted from Arkansas. So just being around that high-level competition every single day just kind of brings the best out of you.
And take us through 17 strikeouts against Oregon State. Just take us through that game. What do you remember most about that contest?
Yeah, that was a really crazy game. It's hard to remember because in the moment, you're just kind of locked into the game. So you don't really realize what's actually happening until I didn't realize until after I got pulled from the game that I had that many strikeouts. And I was like, what in the world? So I was just kind of shocked after that.
Hey, Hagan, along those same lines, it said you only had 78 pitches in that game. Is that the most efficient? I can't imagine striking out 17 on 78 pitches. That's pretty efficient.
Yeah, that was definitely, everything was kind of working that day. And then I remember, mainly I was just throwing fastball and sliders in that game. And I just kind of got in the groove so much I just started throwing changeups randomly. I really didn't even need to. I just kind of felt like work was throwing it against him.
I have to ask you, do you feel pretty confident that you'll be able to, you know, come to terms with the Sox and be part of this organization soon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, talking to my agent, hopefully we get a deal worked out pretty soon in the near future. But, you know, I'm so excited just we have the opportunity and just hopefully we can get that done soon.
Just, you know, Arkansas is a power program. It's produced a lot of big leaguers. What do you feel like they got helped you get better at in your time there, whether it's, you know, designing your slider or, you know, overseeing some of the velocity gains you've been able to make?
Yeah, I mean, all that, all the technology and stuff is really cool. I mean, that can help. But I think just being around high-level talent day in and day out, I mean, just especially with this special group this past year, I mean, as a pitching staff as in general, you know, everyone wants to get better every single day. And I feel like we all push each other to, like, every single day, even in practice. So I think that kind of brought the best out of everybody.
Just, you mentioned your changeup, you know, in pro ball tends to force you to use your changeup more. Just even if that's not a pitch you've used as much, how do you felt about, you know, development of it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really good about it right now. I've still been throwing bullpens and stuff. So, I mean, just kind of working on that. I mean, I feel really confident with it right now. I mean, it's obviously you're going to refine it in games, a little different, just going out there and throwing it more in games. But I feel really good about it right now.
Hagan, you talked about having the confidence in yourself of being one of the better pitchers in the draft. Kind of how would you kind of assess your confidence and kind of what you're like when either you're out there on the mound or just talking about what you can do in the game?
Yeah, just, I mean, just in general, I mean, when I go out there and play, I have the utmost confidence in myself, you know, but, you know, off the field, I'm a super relaxed person. You would never be able to tell I was like that on a baseball field, but it's just something different when you step between those lines. I mean, something different comes out of you.
Just when did you start kind of realizing, like, hey, I am one of the better pitchers in this draft class? Like, was it a certain game or is it just a scouting interest picked up? How did you start to get the feel of, like, this is something that was possible for you?
Yeah, you know, just going into the spring, you know, I thought I made a big jump, but obviously haven't done it in a game yet. So just going into the games, you know, just trying to repeat the weekend, every weekend, just trying to repeat it every weekend. So I mean, it's hard to be good every single weekend. So just trying to do that this year is really my main focus.
Hagan, this draft was kind of interesting because it didn't seem to be a clear cut one. And there's a lot of, you know, guesses as who was going 1 through 10 and that kind of thing. What was the process like for you? Where were you when this was all going down today?
Yeah, so my family and friends, we rented a venue here in Tyler. And, you know, just I'm super happy for all the guys that are drafted, especially the guys that I've met. I mean, they all deserve it as much as anybody else. So, I mean, just super happy, honestly, just to watch the draft. I'm going to go watch the draft after we get done with this. Just see if any of my buddies get drafted and just give them a good text.
Hagan, just for White Sox fans who maybe didn't get to see a lot of college baseball this year, kind of how would you describe yourself as a pitcher as they're getting to know you here for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, on the field, I mean, I feel like I'm a power pitcher. You know, just big time stuff. I feel like I've worked for that, and I feel like I'm gonna keep working for it. Obviously, there's room for improvement, but I feel like I'm a competitor for the first off. I feel like that's my biggest trait. I carry myself as being an elite competitor.
Hagan, Mike Shirley on the quote from the story said he was impressed by all your accomplishments, but impressed by your humility through all the accomplishments too. Is that kind of a balance you like to have? Stay very competitive, but humble at the same time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, off the field and on the field, I'm a completely different person. On the field, there's something about the game of baseball when you step between lines. Like I said, it just kind of brings a different part of you. But yeah, off the field, I mean, I'm super quiet, laid back, just go with the flow type of guy.
So just how did you see your velocity kind of grow, you know, in college and this past season? What's kind of been the program that's, you know, kicked it off for you?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, honestly, just focusing on the weight room, sleep, and nutrition. I mean, that was my big focal point going into my junior year. I mean, I knew there's still stuff meat on the bone right now, but there's a lot going into my junior year. So just attacking the weight room, sleep, and eating, honestly, big credit to my success.
There you go. The fifth overall pick in the 2024 Major League Baseball draft. White Sox left-handed pitcher from Arkansas, Hagan Smith. Hey, White Sox fans, the 2025 schedule is out. Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. To secure your ticket plan and view the full schedule, visit whitesox.com/2025. I'm Jeff Meller. Another hour to go here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game, Cap and Jay Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, hanging out with you till 5:30 when the pregame festivities for White Sox and Royals begin. Of course, the Major League Baseball draft is the lifeblood of any good pipeline. And of course, the White Sox did their best to try and improve theirs this past Sunday, starting on Sunday at least, with the selection of Hagen Smith. And what better chance to pick the brain of the man who was front and center of ESPN's draft coverage on Sunday, Kylie McDaniel. You read all his great stuff, information on ESPN.com. Joining me right now on White Sox Weekly. Kylie, thanks so much for your time today. Do appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, my man. All right, so White Sox fans are curious what they're getting with the big left-hander, Hagen Smith, 6'3" out of Arkansas. Curious your thoughts on how quickly he could move and potentially be ready for Major League Baseball.
He's a really interesting one, because if you were to take the super analytical view of just breaking down his pitches based on their, you know, spin rates and movement profile like that, he grades out just okay. It's like average to a little bit above. And then if you watch him in person, like I saw him at Auburn this year, I was like, okay, so his fastball, which is like 93 to 97, depending on when you catch him, and his slider are both like obviously plus. And then you look at his numbers. I remember that day I saw him at Auburn, I was like, I was a little hot and cold. Like, there were some good parts and some parts where I thought it was more sort of area command as opposed to pinpoint command. And I think that day he struck out 12 and walked zero. So it was like, obviously, like, even overperformed. I was sort of picking holes that weren't there. And the reason there is this disconnect is because often lefties and lower slot pitchers can do better than the eyeball would tell you, and the sort of advanced statistical ways of ranking pitches is sort of known as like stuff plus and things like that. You'll hear, you know, Saris and some of the, you know, very advanced guys, baseball savant, going through that stuff. I lean heavily toward what we're seeing and strikeout rate in college as what's going on here. And because he's a lower slot lefty, it's very easy to compare him to Garrett Crochet or Chris Sale, because he has some of the same things going on, but all three of those guys are obviously unique. So the upside here is a number two starter level, like sort of the best versions of Cease and Giolito, what we're seeing from Crochet this year. He could be that good. There were some rumors that if he would have been on the board at number six, the pick behind the White Sox, Kansas City would have put him straight in the big leagues as a reliever, which is another reason why Sale and Crochet come up a lot.
Yeah.
The hesitation is that his sort of land zone for throwing those two pitches, he throws fastball up and arm side, throws curveball down and glove side. It's like a pretty big land zone. His command is just okay. The Arkansas coach was telling us before, pitching coach was telling us before the draft, that his stuff in zone is some of the best swing and miss, including Paul Skenes, that he's ever seen. He's just not in the zone quite as much as he should be, but he's not one of these guys that's a fireballer that's throwing it all over the place. It's sort of just missing. So it's still a starter, but those are sort of the questions that will make him more of a second starter, more of a fourth starter. That's sort of the question. In that range, where does he end up falling?
Sure, and I know, obviously, directors of scouting always like to talk up their picks, and so maybe you can only take it with a grain of salt, but I know Mike Shirley was mentioning that they do believe there's a third pitch in Hagen Smith that they can unearth, so maybe some work with Brian Bannister, Ethan Katz, maybe that allows too for some development that maybe he can, you know, hit that, you know, that ceiling of number two starter, or maybe even exceed it. Who knows? You know, I know that's something the White Sox are hoping they can do and build with. Kylie McDaniel joining us here on White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Kylie, I'm curious as to your thoughts about the decision by the White Sox to select Hagen Smith when Jack Caglione, the big left-handed power bat and arm from Florida, was still on the board there. What were your thoughts about that decision?
So I ranked J.J. Weatherholt, the shortstop that went seventh overall to the Cardinals. I ranked him third, and then I ranked Caglione and basically a coin flip with him fourth. I feel like those two guys were clearly the next two best guys behind the top two players in the draft, Bazan and Condon, who went first and third. I had Burns fifth, who ended up going second, and then I had Hagen Smith right behind them. I thought Burns was a little better than Hagen Smith, but certainly it's more of a different flavors than, like, obviously one's better than the other. I would have taken Weatherholt or Caglione. Again, it's more what flavor are you looking for? You're looking for more in like the Jose Ramirez area or more in like the Aaron Judge area, which is like the best scenario for those two players. Mm-hmm. I would have taken Caglione. I'll be curious if I hear sort of on the backfield. Actually, Mike Shirley was at the game I was at earlier today, so maybe I'll go talk to him tomorrow. What the sort of thought process was. I know Jeff Passan had a report right after the Hagen Smith pick that I get the impression was, you know, sort of the thought process at the White Sox, which was with Crochet and Fetty and Kopech probably on the way out in one form or another in the next year or two, or heading free agency, or, you know, whatever it is, like probably will not be on the team in 2 or 3 years, just given how things are going, that Hagan Smith teaming him with Drew Thorpe, all these guys that required in the last year, along with Noah Schultz, that will be the sort of front of the next rotation the next time the team is super competitive, putting that together. But you could also just say, like, Jack Hagelin will be batting fourth on that team. You don't have to take a pitcher. Like, it, yeah. Logically, that doesn't mean you have to take one and not the other. So I'll be super curious to see how this goes. Also, at the fourth overall pick, Oakland took Nick Kurtz, a guy that I think his range of possibilities are somewhere from Nick Johnson, because he's had some injury issues, all the way up to Anthony Rizzo, also ahead of Jack Caglione, and also saved some money and spent some of that on Tommy White, Tommy Tanks, I think a guy that maybe is the second most famous guy in the draft class before Caglione. So all that to say, that whole range of the draft is super intriguing, because there was a that like third through sixth or seventh tier of players are all basically the same. You just have to pick which one you want to take, how much money you're going to save, who do you get with the savings, do you go over, do you try to float a guy down, and all those teams are going to get they're going to get judged based on how things play out, as though that is how what they should have thought at the time. And in reality, they are all very close. And so I'm curious how Hagan Smith will work out, because he has a chance to be the first one to get to the big leagues. I just don't think the White Sox have the sort of incentives that Kansas City has to put him in the big leagues right away, because obviously there's not a playoff race to sort of thrust him into to, you know, get an eighth inning lefty reliever that maybe you don't have. It's more, let's turn him into a starter and see if that splitter can turn into a pitch that he, you know, throws more than 3 or 4 times every outing.
Kylie McDaniel, ESPN draft expert, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Kylie, you bring the whole idea of signing bonus, your slot number, and, you know, I think your casual baseball fan may not completely be able to wrap their head around exactly what's going on, because Charlie Condon, you know, the third overall pick, sets a record for the most money. Meanwhile, Travis Bazzana is selected first overall. Can you just kind of like talk a little bit for the casual fans out there who maybe don't completely understand, hey, the best player may not be being selected top overall, and why that is, a little bit more, expand on that if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, it's infuriating for us on the set. I remember at the beginning of the broadcast, the producer got in my ear, and Carl Ravitch looked at me and is like, okay, explain how this slotting thing works in about 15 seconds. And I was like, I mean, I'll take one lap through it. I'm not positive it's going to be super clear. So the idea is, because there is essentially not trading of picks in the baseball draft, you can trade a couple picks, but in only certain windows, whatever. Essentially, you can't trade picks in the way that you can in basketball and football. So in basketball and football, you can trade picks, and there are hard slots, what you get paid for each pick. And so the idea is players get picked in the correct order, the sort of consensus order, or what the team picking thinks the best player is, and you just pay them whatever. And in baseball, you can't trade picks, but you get a fixed amount of money and a fixed amount of picks. And so the idea is, rather than trading picks, you can effectively trade up or trade down by taking, say, the 10th best player that you that everyone thinks is the 10th best guy that is asking for the 10th highest bonus, but you think he's the second best player, and the first player goes first, and you're picking second, you would then take that 10th best player, give him, say, the 9th highest bonus, and then the gap between those two, say, $2 million, it's effectively like trading the second pick for the 9th, because the money is the same, but you don't then acquire the 30th overall pick. What you do is at your next pick, you then juice that bonus by the $2 million you saved by taking a, quote, lesser talent at your second pick, which usually the team thinks is an equivalent talent. And because we're talking about sometimes 17-year-old high school players, the gap between what teams think can be really wide, whereas we're talking about 21, 22-year-old college players, they're not going to go back to school. The teams think about the same thing about them. You can't really float them down the board and make demands, because they're going to be worth less money next year when they're 22. There's guys in the big leagues that are younger than them. So high school players are sort of the key for going under, going over, all those sorts of ideas because of the leverage they have. But sometimes at the very top of the draft, Travis Bazzana can have an offer from the first team and an offer from the second team and then decide which one he wants. But at the top of the draft, those bonuses set how much money you have left for your next picks. And so it's very hard to go blind into pick number two, not knowing what you're paying pick number one. So at the very top of the draft, teams like to have deals done ahead of time. And so if a player doesn't want to engage with a team, they can kind of push themselves down a slot or two. But when they're clearly the best player, they're just going to take them because the teams know the player's not going to turn down an amount of money. So that's maybe not what happened with Caglione, but that's like effectively what can happen when there's a coin flip between three similar talents, is sometimes you can be obstinate and move a pick or two down and maybe get more money or go to a team you'd rather go to, or, you know, whatever that may be. And the team that saves money can then spend it on other players later, again, effectively trading picks, even though you can't actually trade picks.
Great explanation. I do appreciate that. It adds a whole nother level of game theory to the drafts that I think a lot of people may not be completely aware of when they are, like I said, if they're more casual and not completely in it like someone like you are. Curious what you thought of some of the other picks by the White Sox, Kylie. Caleb Bonemer, the high schooler in the second round. Blake Larson, the comp pick that they selected 68th overall. Or maybe even Nick McClain, Matt's brother. Any of those three players stand out to you, or anything you just want to, you know, add about any of them? For your, take your pick.
Yeah, I would even toss in the next pick, Casey Stocky, who I think is really interesting. He was a guy going all the way back to high school that had some tools, looked like he might be a third baseman. I think he's now settled as a right fielder, but he is in the long lineage of players that have gone to Virginia that have raw power but never get to the raw power in the game. So you have Zach Geloff and Adam Haseley and Pavin Smith, and some of these guys work out, some of them don't. But he's a classic example of the, he has the tools to be maybe better than he was in college if a team can teach him to lift the ball in the game. And because he's been sort of changing positions and adjusting parts of his approach, he was sort of thought to be a developmental college guy in that third to fourth round area. I would also say the two high school players, Bonemer and Larson, in the second round. Bonemer was a guy that, you know, we heard could go in the in the 20s or 30s, probably was going to land in the 40s. He is a shortstop, extremely athletic, maybe even more than he appears. He tested out really well with force plates and accelerometers and all this advanced stuff that they do to sort of measure athleticism as it applies to baseball. You can imagine there's an NFL combine sort of athleticism where you're doing like bench presses and explosive jumps and things like that. Whereas in baseball, it's more like what's happening between your fingertips and your forearms and your elbows, and how quickly can you move on your first step, your fourth and fifth step doesn't matter as much. He's really good at those baseball specific movements. And so if he ends up hitting, there's not really a question if he can hit. He just was in high school in Michigan, so it's not quite as much known. He was pretty good over the summer. He's a very good athlete. He can play shortstop. So if that hit tool comes, if he's hitting 350 in A-ball, then like you got a real guy. And then Blake Larson is another interesting guy, another low slot lefty. He's from Iowa, but went to IMG Academy in Florida last year to get more experience against top end players. He has the raw components that Hagen Smith and Crochet and Noah Schultz have, but is just sort of new to throwing hard. He's new to throwing strikes. And so getting seen a lot in Florida against top competition this year, it was basically like a 3-month stretch of him sitting, you know, 92 to 95 with a good breaking ball from that same low arm slot. It's just, again, it's new to him, whereas Noah Schultz has been a guy since he was like a freshman in high school. So it wasn't as novel when he was showing that. But Larson has a chance to join those guys as a potential second or third starter. But in that group of players, if you pick 15 of them, one of them will turn into that guy. He's in that bucket where you just sort of take that spin, that lottery ticket, and hope that everything can click and he can turn into that guy.
Kylie McDaniel joining us here for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. One more guy I want to throw at you. Listen, if you don't know a ton about him, that's fine, but I imagine being the draft expert that you are, you probably have something. The story behind the 17th round pick, Lyle Miller Green, who was born in Siberia and then was adopted at the, you know, at the age of one by some American parents. And then, you know, he's a little bit older, but when you look at some of the advanced metrics that, you know, you've referenced already, some pretty outrageous stuff. What's your thoughts on the 17th round pick by the White Sox, Lyle Miller Green?
So he was actually a guy that I didn't know because he was a Austin Peay, like a mid-major. Mm-hmm. And I think he's like turning 24 in like a month or two. So like in terms of like prospect value, you don't often see these guys coming up. Those are usually the guys you sign for a year or so and then you release. And that could be what he is. But when you just look at, I'm looking at his page on the draft tracker on MLB.com, and it says two-way player Russia. And I'm just like, I have never seen those two things together on the draft tracker. And I actually became aware of him because I get this TrackMan sheet with all the exit deals and stuff from teams, because now, like, you know, everyone that works there gets access to this stuff. So I get somebody to send one over to me, and he, I think, was right next to Jack Caglione in terms of raw power.
I know, I saw that. It jumped out.
Yeah, and I was like, who is this guy? And you go look him up, and he's almost 24, and he's like, you know, plays at Austin Peay and doesn't really play position, and then you see his background, and you're just like, oh, this is like a wild story. But yeah, he's a guy that, and also he's like a couple years older than these guys, so him having the same exits as Caglione is not as notable, because Caglione's exits will continue to go up as he gets older, and Lyle Miller Green is already the age of some big leaguers, so that's sort of topped out at some level. But I mean, he's got easily plus, if not plus-plus, raw power. He's got some fuel to hit. He's got a decent approach. There's not a ton of speed or defensive value. He has pitched a little bit before, too. He has some, like, loft to his swing. There's a little bit of bat to ball. Like, he's kind of interesting in that there are some tools here, and something we like to talk about in scouting is, like, the narrative of, like, there's a reason that this guy wasn't at LSU for 4 years putting up enormous numbers and all that kind of thing. And if he hung around in college, he might have done that with the way the transfer portal is. And so a lot of times when you have a guy where there's an explanation why he wasn't a standout player, but may have some, you know, latent characteristics that'll come out later. This guy has some of that stuff. So while he might not be a first or second round pick on talent, he has some things in common with those guys. And often when you see the guys later in the draft end up being big leaguers or, you know, better than you expect, it's usually because they have one or two outlier characteristics and they have some narrative elements about why maybe they were held back or counted out or, you know, whatever it might be. And he has some of that stuff. So you were right to pinpoint him out of that group. When you said later draft pick, I was like, oh boy, like I might not know all these guys, but I do know that guy because he just, like, my sheet basically exploded when I opened it up and saw his name.
Yeah, it's a great story. All right, I'm going to let you go, but as I do let you go, Kylie, were you like me as a casual fan, just kind of like rooting for all these guys to reach their dream? When Chase Burns was selected second overall, I had a huge sigh of relief. And then when Charlie Condon was selected third by the Rockies, I was giddy. I was ecstatic. I was like, both these players, it worked out beautifully because I did not want Chase Burns to end up in Colorado because I'm always rooting for guys to just go out and have their best possible careers.
A little bit, yeah. I think actually Chase Burns would have gone third if he didn't go second, and I don't think a lot of people thought he was going to go second. I actually had them flipped, those guys two and three, mm-hmm. In my final mock draft. But yeah, I was actually thinking the same thing, but after I broke down on the broadcast that Bill Schmidt tried to draft Chris Bryant, couldn't get him, tried to trade for him, couldn't get him, and then gave him a crazy amount of money after he was good because he loves that kind of player. And Charlie Condon's number one comp is Chris Bryant. I was like, oh, this guy's supposed to be there. Like, if he's going to hit 50, that's where he's going to go. Chase Burns, like, fitting in with Cincinnati where they've had, you know, Graham Ashcraft and Hunter Green and all these power righties. They traded for Chase Petty and the Sonny Gray deal, who's another guy like that that's going to be in the big league soon. It's like, oh, this just sort of fits what both teams are doing. And while Chase Burns maybe doesn't fit well in Cincinnati either because he's probably going to give up a lot of home runs, he's also probably going to strike out like a ton of dudes because he just throws 100 at the top of the zone with one of the best sliders in college baseball, like comparable to Paul Skeens' slider. So if he can learn a splinker, then he might be a phenomenon too. But I don't think we expect most guys to learn the best pitch in baseball while they're in AAA.
Great info, Kylie. Really do appreciate the time today. Keep up the great work. We'll be watching.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
Kylie McDaniel, again, ESPN's draft expert with some great breakdown there of the White Sox top picks. We'll let you hear from amateur director of scouting Mike Shirley at 5 o'clock, his thoughts on the White Sox draft. Hey, White Sox fans, join us at the ballpark next Saturday, July 27th, as the White Sox take on the Mariners at 6:15. The first 20,000 fans will receive a Chicago short sleeve hoodie presented by Coke Zero Chicago. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. As I mentioned, 10 minutes from now, we'll let you hear from the White Sox scouting director on their draft, and we'll get you caught up on the latest regarding the White Sox game tonight against the Royals. That's all next here on ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Love the way you move out there. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight this week. Connor on the call with Darren Jackson of White Sox and Royals. First pitch coming your way at 6:10 tonight. Jonathan Cannon, the belated birthday boy, turned 24 a couple days ago, will be on the mound for the White Sox, opposing Brady Singer for the Kansas City Royals. Lineup is in for the White Sox. In right field, leading off, Tommy Pham. Hitting second and playing left field will be Andrew Benintendi. Playing center field, La Pantera, Luis Robert Jr. in center. Batting cleanup, playing first base, Andrew Vaughn, who is leading the team in RBIs with 43 this season. Eloy Jimenez will be doing the DHing, hitting fifth. Brooks Baldwin will be manning second base, hitting sixth after his first career major league hit and his debut yesterday. Nicky Lopez playing shortstop, batting seventh. Paul DeJong will be manning the hot corner and batting eighth. And, of course, as I mentioned, lots of roster moves. Chucky Robinson, the 29-year-old, will be doing the catching now that Martin Maldonado is no longer a member of the White Sox. He will be behind the plates as Corey Lee will get the night off after homering yesterday. I am Jeff Meller again. Connor McKnight will have the call with Darren Jackson. White Sox try and snap this losing streak. Unfortunately, it's been a rough year. It continues to be. Can they snap the five-game skid that they have carried over from the All-Star break? Hopefully that will be the case. Brady Singer has been good this year for the Royals, so
They will have their work cut out for him. He brings a 3.20 ERA to the mound. He's pitched 104 innings and has struck out 99. So he will be a formidable opponent tonight for the White Sox as they do try and grab their 20th win on the season and thwart the Kansas City Royals' attempts at moving up in the AL Central. All right, let's before we let you hear from White Sox scouting director Mike Shirley about the draft that concluded this week, let's pause 10 seconds for a legal identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, so like I said, Mike Shirley had a lot of interesting thoughts, including why it may be a little bit more difficult for teams to achieve their goals in the Major League Baseball draft. We'll let you hear what he had to say this past week. When we come back, White Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil, starting at just $19. Each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, plus a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. All right, Mike Shirley, we'll let you hear what he had to say coming up next here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Connor McKnight will be along shortly with your play-by-play today, along with Darren Jackson, as the White Sox take on the Royals. First pitch coming your way at 6:10. Pre-game coverage will begin at 5:30, right after White Sox Weekly wraps up. Hey, White Sox fans, new this season, take advantage of savings all summer long with our Summer Savings section. Enjoy select lower-level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games. While supplies last, excludes the Cubs series. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section to take advantage of those summer savings. All right, as we mentioned, big week for the White Sox on Sunday, started on Sunday at least, and continued throughout the week. Mike Shirley has been critical to the scouting process, helping Chris Getz out, as the White Sox really did try to do their best to revitalize the pipeline coming through in the minor leagues. And of course, it always starts with the Major League Baseball draft. Mike Shirley met the media, and he was peppered with questions.
What made Hagen Smith the choice at number five? And while you were completely straightforward with us and told us that there were two pitchers among the 10 you were looking at, it, why a pitcher over a position player at that spot there?
I mean, there was a lot of movement in the first five picks. I mean, it was a delayed process a little bit with Cleveland. Everybody in the industry was waiting for the Indians, or I'm sorry, the Guardians to set that parameter. Hagen was the guy that was a real target. During the meetings in this previous 10 days, we've talked about the extensive arsenal Hagen brings to our ball club, and it's going to make an impact. Our success with the Chris Sales of the world, the Garrett Crochets of the world, the Noah Schultz of the world, this is another piece of the same puzzle that we have success with. And as you start to build out a rotation, these pieces are coming together. You guys know that the guys that take that mound on that starting rotation is a key and integral part of building a championship club. We are starting to make a move into that process where we have real pieces that are going to make a difference for the White Sox. And we couldn't be more excited having Hagen Smith into this organization, and most importantly, the human, the competitiveness and stuff to make a difference for the White Sox.
The word on both Smith and Burns were that they're pretty close to big league ready. Would you agree with that assessment?
I would agree with that. You know, obviously you want to be delicate. You want to make sure you build them up. You want to make sure the long-term play of and health and overall make sure they're major league ready. But the weapons, the arsenal is real. These guys are, most importantly, they're elite athletes with elite stuff.
With Hagen, just both, what about your confidence in, development of a third pitch as much as he dominated with fastball and slider played into, you know, this choice, and also your confidence in how specifically he would develop with, you know, the White Sox, with, you know, Brian Bannister, with Matt Zaleski, with kind of what has been successful to the system previously?
Absolutely. And we think there's a third pitch in there. When you dominate the varsity league, we call that the varsity league, the SEC, at the levels in which you did that, and you do it without a third pitch, that's a pretty good indicator of how good the two weapons are. I think the changeup comes. Obviously, it's something we continue to dive into up to the moment. He feels good about his changeup. He feels good about developing that pitch. But the Brian Bannister is excited about this pick. a big part of the process in selecting the player. And we know what power lefties do in our ballpark and the success and the runway we've had with these type of players.
I mean, maybe it's too hard, far to see along, but do you see this as a profile that could add a cutter the way that Noah Schultz, Garrett Crochets, and you know similar profiles in this system could add a cutter and could it fit with them?
I mean, you know, we've taken Garrett, we've taken Noah, now we got this another piece of the same sector. It's working, guys. I mean, I like to think that our success rate in this arena is something we need to continue to build on. You guys know what starting pitching means in this league, and it's hard to find. And you need a bunch of it if you're going to build championship clubs.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to ask about Caleb and just what you saw there, what you like about him.
Most importantly, impact tools. We got a player that, you know, obviously, you know, if you understand what the White Sox do at the amateur level in the summer, we are the Midwest representative of an area code program. We take, you know, the top high school players out of about 17 state sector to California every year to play. We're in the dugout with them. We coach them. We're around them. We surround them in this pro environment. Caleb, from the first time he stepped on the main stage of the circuit last summer, has shown us dynamic tools, five tools. It's hit, it's power. He was one of the best players on the circuit last year. Our scouts were super excited about him. We feel like the makeup is right. He was committed to the the University of Virginia. It's a real piece of the pie in terms of his approach, his makeup in terms of his diligence to the game. And we think there's right-handed strength, both hit and power. You know, he can run. I think overall his defense really took a step forward this year and it's something he really worked hard on. Cold weather player who we think's got a runway to continue to grow significantly when you look at ceiling of the player.
And about that defense, do you see shortstop, third base?
Yeah, we want to send him out as a shortstop and want to exhaust every avenue to keep him at that position. Again, up the middle of the field player with bat ability. Those are the type of profiles that we continue to try to attack.
Hey, Mike, you mentioned it there a little bit in your opening, but just what was that process like trying to watch how everything unfolded with those four picks leading up to where you guys were at with five?
Yeah, and I think the industry as a whole, you know, when you look at how that thing was going, I think the industry as a whole liked a group of about 10 players, and it was really close on that top five, six, seven players. So, you know, you were trying, there's a lot of money, monetary values being factored into that. You know, it was delicate. The Guardians, everyone in the league was waiting on the Guardians to make that selection. It got tricky. There were a lot of opportunities that we examined, but we were super excited about Hagen. So, he was a target as we amongst that group of players.
Hey, Mike, I think, you know, people from the outside, they look and they say, well, they need left-handed power and they need, you know, a middle infield talent and that kind of thing. But you kind of explained it the other day that this whole thing is a puzzle, and that puzzle probably goes out to what Chris is going to do too, right? What Chris is going to do in the next couple of weeks and just what you're doing overall. So do you have to kind of look at what helps right away, but also what helps throughout the draft too, what you can add on?
Yeah, I think, I mean, most importantly, Chris did a great job being involved with us extensively through this. His contributions were significant, game planning, but that's the way Chris has ran the organization since he took over. It's about the game plan. It's about comprehension. It's very inclusive. Everybody's included in the process to understand where the White Sox are trying to go. So the goal is common. The direction is set. So everybody understands the process, what we're trying to acclimate and most importantly, accomplish. So Chris is involved. The plan is real. You guys understand what's going on with the White Sox as a whole. So, I mean, there are hard decisions that are coming, possibly. But we feel good about that left-handed arsenal and that stable we're building. Garrett is significant. Noah is significant. Hagen Smith is significant.
You said you had 10 going at number five. How many did it come down to today, would you say? Or was Hagen the guy if he was there?
No, we talked about we probably got to a solid six players at the end of the day. And, you know, we were in conversations with many players, and the players that went in front of us. We were in conversation with them. We were playing the financial game. We understood what was going on in the industry. It's our job to exhaust every avenue to make the right pick, you know. So it was delicate what Cincinnati was going to do it to. I mean, it worked to the rest of the draft. We felt comfortable with what Oakland was possibly going to do in front of us, and it played out what the information we had. And we were aggressive in front of us. We were trying to acquire a lot of pieces. The draft was a quality draft at the top of.
Bonimer obviously played on your area codes team and did really well there. Just, you know, he's someone you hear about, you know, pull power. being a big part of his game, to see it shine both there and PG National, how much does that play a role in being able to project how it would fare against a better competition?
Huge, because, I mean, Michigan high school baseball is not at the level of the summer circuit. So when he's facing the pro level types arms all summer on this circuit, and he's performing at an extremely high level, and he's driving in runs, he's coming up clutch. We've been doing this area code team for a long time. Our 2023 area code team was one of the best teams we've ever had. It was one of the most impactful teams we've ever had. So to think about, you know, landing Blake Larson with our second pick tonight, he was on our area code team. Think about landing with Caleb Bonnemer. That part of this puzzle is making a difference for us. It's active. It's ran by J.J. Lally. You know, him and Rob Cummings are significantly involved with it. All our area scouts are involved with it. I'm involved with it. Garrett Guest is involved. We're all trying to build this club so we feel like the runway off the evaluations initially. We're trying to get those players out to California with us. We get our hands on them. We get to see what they're truly about when they succeed and when they fail. This has been a great opportunity for the White Sox. We've ran for a while. So Caleb answered the bell for us. Our interview at the Combine was great. He comes from a great family. He's very humble, but he's also very confident. He's not, you know, he's not a overly outspoken kid. He's there to play baseball. His intent is right, but he enjoys it. And we think we got another winner.
With Larson, just, you know, any high school pitcher is a developmental project. What gives you a lot of confidence about the ingredients he brings to the table?
Brian Bannister was excited about, you know, what Blake did. Our scouts were excited about Blake. It's now stuff with a bunch of projection. He's originally from the state of Iowa, who went to the IMG Academy for his development. So J.J. Lally had some real foundation with him as a high school player. And as he's transitioned down to IMG, Steph Sagi, Alan Moore, Area Scout in Florida, those guys really did a nice job tracking him. The interesting part about Larson, which is so different in this stuff world we're living in, if you watch his fifth, sixth inning was better than his first and second. He's a guy that gets stronger as the game goes, which is uncommon in this world of stuff. Guys come out blowing heaters. This guy's really competitive. You see his best stuff sometimes later in the game because he's trying to put his foot on the gas pedal when it counts and he's trying to get wins.
Yeah, Mike, you talked about just like playing the draft game a little bit, like just up at the top. But how are you feeling about just bonus pool wise going into tomorrow and then day three?
We've had to extend ourselves a bit. The landscape's changed, guys. The high school player was asking for a whole lot more money. I think we understand what's happening at the college level, how they're sharing. There's a lot of money being spent on college players. I'm a little surprised that the high school player is not taking a more realistic look at where they fit in the landscape of the transfer portal. It's tough for those incoming freshmen. It seems like the demand requests were a little elevated. The college player is also, you know, I can go back to school and make some money. It's a little tricky right now as you navigate the whole bonus pool situation. There were a lot of people with elevated numbers, and I was a little bit of fight. We had to work. But we got three good pieces we've won. We're excited.
Yeah, just, you know, it seemed like there was kind of a run with high school players, you know, second round. Do you see that as kind of, the nature of teams kind of having to figure out where they can go over slot and trying to get those deals done, in the first day?
Yeah, you're trying. I mean, it matters. I mean, you're trying to, I think the high school players, I mean, I keep trying to say to everybody, these guys have a lot more ceiling, a lot more upside as a whole. So I think you have to take shots on goal with these players, and you're trying to find that good combination of mix between the college player and the high school player to balance the portfolio of your draft, and you're trying to be successful. And it's a little bit more tricky right now than it's ever been.
And with Smith, you know, the two pitches are obviously huge weapons, but how rare was the command level you were able to see where, you know, you're able to feel pretty safe projecting him as a starter?
All right, so I'm in Arlington, Texas at the Rangers Stadium this year. It's the best performance I've ever seen on a college pitcher, ever. I've been doing this a long time. He took Oregon State for a ride I've never seen a college pitcher take any lineup for. On the big stage, it was 19 punch-outs. It was the most dominating stuff I've ever seen since I've been scouting. He has that type of weapons. He can put you away. He can make you uncomfortable. As the great Jim Tomey said, I might need to take a day off when we face this guy. So just part of it, man. This guy's real.
And Mike, he's kind of described himself as kind of a creature of habit. I know he like goes to bed at 9 and gets up at 7 and has a very regimented schedule. Do you kind of like that? I mean, before he even gets to pro ball where you're on a bit of a schedule, he's already kind of holding himself accountable.
Yeah, he's the CEO of his own company. And it's a real company. So there's a diligent plan to what he's trying to accomplish with his life. He didn't come to the combine. I get on the plane, flew right to Omaha. He was in Omaha for the Golden Spikes Award. We sit down. We had a great conversation. He and I just sitting down, the team hotel the University of Tennessee was staying at. He and I are just sitting there and they're having a great conversation to make sure he understood who the White Sox were. I understood who he was. Just a tremendous opportunity. Shared a lot. You start to see how diligent he is in his plan, how prepared he is in his plan. Makes you a whole lot more comfortable with who he is as a player and as a person, most importantly. He's a humble kid. He believes in loyalty, trust. He builds his life around foundational relationships. And I think those are the things that attract you to the player as you want to invest this type of dollar in it.
I know you've worked with Chris Getz for a long time, but what was kind of the first draft, first day, at least under a kind of a new regime like?
Fully invested. His relationships across the game help. Him being a farm director and dealing with all the advisors, all the companies that represent players was a real benefit tonight. It was a real win. Just because I think being in that farm director role, you have a chance to really touch all the players that are in that. So you build these relationships with these people. He was a real winner for us tonight. Helped out tremendously. He was prepared. He understand what we want to do. Like I said, even the workload just getting up to the draft day, we were prepared tonight. And he was a huge part of just giving us all guidance on what the plan was. And he's been in there every moment. He's fully invested in this. And that the staff, everyone appreciates that, top to bottom in the organization.
That is White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Mike Shirley, obviously had his hands all over this draft. Chris Getz, of course, making the final call, but with a lot of input from the entire White Sox scouting staff, including Mike Shirley there. Lots of thoughts. Interesting to hear him talk about Hagen Smith putting on the most dominant pitching performance he has ever seen, in particular against Oregon State, who did have the top drafted player, Travis Bazzana, in this year's draft. Hagen Smith striking Bazzana out 3 times in that performance. So you wonder if just seeing that firsthand was really what put it over the top for the White Sox. And I can't argue. I had Kylie McDaniel on early in the show, ESPN's draft expert. And, as I was watching the draft take place on Sunday, I was kind of personally hoping the White Sox might select Jack Caglione, because I do think that left-handed power stick in the middle of your order is so valuable and something that the White Sox could certainly use. But I completely understand Mike Shirley when he talks about it. You hear him speak about what they saw from Hagen Smith, and they believe they can also unearth a third pitch from him. And they've had so much success in the past with pitchers like Chris Sale and Garrett Crochet and hopefully Noah Schultz, who is the best young arm in the pitching pipeline for the White Sox. I can understand why, when you've got Brian Bannister on staff, somebody who you trust to work with young pitchers. And, another thing Mike Shirley said, I'm not sure if it was in that piece we played for because he did speak several times, but he noted how you got to draft as many left-handed pitchers as you can. And that's something that they really want to make a focal point. So I understand why they did it, and ultimately, hopefully Hagen Smith will be pitching at Guaranteed Rate Stadium, maybe in the not-too-distant future. I am Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight today. Connor's got the call along with Darren Jackson as the White Sox will take on the Kansas City Royals at Kauffman Stadium today in the second of a 3-game set before they get set to take on the Texas Rangers in Arlington after that. We'll get you set with the pregame show coming up next. I'll also let you hear from the White Sox second-round pick, not their second-round pick, but their second pick in the draft. Caleb Bonimer, we'll let you hear what he had to say earlier this week on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to actually, you know what? Let me tell you this one. This is the one you want to hear about. White Sox fans, new this season, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy select lower level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games while supplies last. Exclude the Cup Series. To purchase tickets, visit the whitesox.com/section. All right, Caleb Bonimer, the White Sox second round pick, a shortstop, or at least listed as a shortstop. You love to get those athletes. Here's what he had to say when he met the media earlier this week.
Love to play shortstop. I played shortstop my whole life, and it's definitely something I think I could do. But at the end of the day, I'll do whatever it takes to get to the big leagues as quick as possible and to win. So whatever helps the team the best, I'm down for it. But I do think I do have the capabilities to play shortstop.
I guess what kind of profile are you as an offensive player?
Yeah, I'd say last summer I kind of showed a little bit more of a power type guy. But I will say historically growing up, I was kind of more of a contact first type of guy. That's kind of just built on some power growing in my body a little bit. But yeah, I would say probably a little bit more power first, but I think I can probably upgrade my hit to a little bit and something I've been working on.
Have you ever tried out other positions or is it just taking reps at shortstop?
Yeah, last summer a lot, played a lot of third on the showcase circuit. So yeah, a lot of third, short, second base a little bit too. But yeah, I'd say primarily those three positions is kind of where I've been at.
When reading reports about you, the thing that like everyone kind of talks about is being able to pull the ball and drive the ball for power to the pull side. Is that something that's always come naturally to you, or is it something you've cultivated over the years?
Yeah, it's kind of something that's naturally. I don't really like try to do it, I would say. And like I said before, I was kind of growing up, I was more of a hit first, contact first type of guy, and just kind of got bigger. So, but yeah, I will say kind of just naturally my stroke is kind of left center, left field. But yeah, I would say I do pull the ball quite a bit.
Hey, Caleb, I know you have a commitment to Virginia too. Is it going to be a tough call, or I mean, you know, how certain do you feel about starting your professional career?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain I'll be playing professional baseball. And I'm looking forward to getting ready to go.
How important is that summer circuit? You know, as a fellow Midwesterner, the weather can get a little cockeyed in Michigan and Illinois during the, you know, the spring months. How important is it to get out there in that summer circuit? How was it for you, as I should say?
Yeah, it was definitely, it was huge for me. Cause actually the summer before I was hurt and couldn't play at all. So last summer really kind of put me on the radar. And like you said, being able to play against the top competition, we don't always see that up here in Michigan. So to be able to do that was definitely big for me. And to be able to just play my game in front of all the right people kind of just helped me a lot and got my name out there.
You have a player, major league player, or even minor league player, who you kind of pattern your game after, or maybe not pattern, but have just followed him, like the way he plays.
Yeah. Recently I've been liking Bobby Witt Jr. I don't really like try to copy him or anything, but he's one of my favorite players. Love watching him play.
Those adjustments you talked about making about not trying to get under balls and shorten your stride length, what have you seen from doing that? What kind of pitches are you getting to now that maybe you weren't doing as much as you wanted to before?
Yeah, definitely like high velo fastballs up in the zone. Kind of just being able to get on plane with that earlier because before I was super uphill. But yeah, I would say elevated heaters kind of helped me a lot, flatten out my path. Then also kind of using the other field, opposite field a little bit more, and be able to catch balls a little bit deeper. So yeah, definitely high velo up in the zone.
Is that kind of in preparation for, you know, that's the sort of thing that you're going to be able to face in pro ball a lot?
Yeah, for sure. Cause, and part of it was high school. Sometimes we're seeing 70, 75 miles an hour and the ball's coming in like this. So, I just got to get back to tighten up my path and tighten up my swing. And yeah, that's kind of what I've been working on.
All right, that's going to wrap up White Sox Weekly this week. Thanks to Kylie McDaniel, Connor McKnight, and of course, our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, and Kevin Zipak on the board as well. I'm Jeff Meller, coming back with White Sox pregame coverage up next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.